This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I'm Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Stacy Westfall from Ohio.
And you're listening to the Stacy Westfall episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for December the 3rd. This episode is brought to you by Equithrive. Good morning, horse world. Well, hi, everybody. We are here. And thank you so much for joining us this morning, the day after Radiothon. You're probably all wondering why I can talk. It's because we pre-recorded this before Radiothon. That's why. Thank you, Stacy, for doing that, because I literally cannot talk the day after Radiothon.
So. Now, since I literally couldn't talk during the last one that we recorded live, I definitely can empathize.
Well, Stacy, of course, is here the first Tuesday of every month. She's done a couple of episodes. You can find her previous episodes. Go to horsesinthemorning.com and click on Stacy Westfall, a little banner down in the middle of the page, and it'll take you to her past episodes. Well, if you are wanting to listen to Radiothon from yesterday, all 12 hours, you can go to Horses in the Morning. That's where we put them. We put the recorded episodes broken up by hour right there on Horses in the Morning, on the feed for Horses in the Morning, on the homepage. So if you don't listen to Horses in the Morning normally, you can find it on your podcast player. Just search for it. You'll find it there. And you'll find all 12 hours. You can go back and take a listen. I am sure it was fantastic and fun.
I'm sure it was too.
And Stacy hosted for her first time, and she did unbelievably wonderfully.
That is so good to know going into this.
I'm sure you'll do great. So you can listen to Stacy in there as well. But you did something since we talked the last time that was kind of fun. And what year were you inducted into the Cowgirl Hall of Fame?
2012.
Was it started long before? I don't remember it being really, really old, like 40 years old, or is it?
You know, I started in 1975.
Oh, wow. It really is old. Okay. I didn't think it was that old. So were you surprised when you got word, or do they warn you ahead of time that you might be?
So I was surprised, and yet they do warn you. So it's kind of that dance of both of those things, because there's a ton of paperwork that goes into it. So it was very funny because this year there was a lady who was retired from the Navy, and she was like, getting clearance for the highest level mission is less paperwork than filling out for this. Because they start asking you a lot of questions. They want a lot of background when they're kind of gathering everything together. And so, yeah, it was really kind of fun.
So you went down there for that. And so what were your impressions? What'd you take away from this year's?
You know, I think it's kind of neat because the Hall of Fame, the museum, basically their mission statement is that they want to like honor and celebrate women in the past and the present. And they are looking for women that are, they want them who exemplify courage, resilience, independence. I kind of liked how one of the ladies that was announcing said grit, guts, and grace.
I like the words there.
And so they're looking for these women that are like that. So it's an amazing event to go hang out with. So there were 1,200 people at the luncheon, and it was held at the brand new arena that they just built in Fort Worth. And it was just amazing to be among all of these women that have done so much and just impacted the world. And so it's super neat because they have all these different categories. So there will be women there that I was inducted in more of the riding, you know, aspect of it. But there's ladies who have done a lot with like art or there's all these different categories for going in, but they basically all revolve around that idea of, you know, breaking new ground and, you know, setting out to, you know, do things that have never been done. Like yeah, it's just, it's really fun atmosphere to be in. Amazing, inspiring.
You know, as I was reading about the Navy person that was inducted, Christina Alvarado Shanahan, and she was actually a Rear Admiral. She was the first Hispanic female to achieve Rear Admiral status. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, and I'm trying to see whether or not
she was a nurse. Apparently, she was in first nurse to command Naval Reserve. I can't even say the words.
Yeah. So what was really neat? Her story was just amazing because when she took over, the survival rates were in the 70 something percent of like injured servicemen in the line of service, and she got it up to 98%.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, like, she was sitting there telling about, like, how, you know, how she was received when she was first moved up into it and how all of this. And it was just like, oh, my goodness, she made these huge impacts. It's just, yeah. So it's super
and she
inspiring.
Also rides paint horses and has been a champion.
With world titles?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. On the side. Yeah.
While saving saving lives of our soldiers, she also does that.
Yeah. 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 And I can send you a picture of me with her because I was like, can I have a picture with you, please?
That'd be great. We'll use that in our show notes picture today. That'd be terrific. You know, she deserves it for sure. But there were many others, too. I'm looking through here that were nominated. And they had the inaugural Sergeant Reckless Award, huh?
Yeah. And so they opened up a whole new park behind the Cowgirl Museum. And they've got this really, really amazing giant bronze, like life-size bronze of Reckless. And, you know, a horse that's going to go run its own missions, travel 35 miles, literally with nobody handling it.
Like, yeah.
That's amazing.
We've talked a lot about Reckless, and we just had Robin Hutton on again. She's been a regular guest. She's the one that wrote the book, Sergeant Reckless.
Yeah. Yeah. And she was there.
Yeah. We just had her on like a week ago because she wrote a new book. And we talked about that. But do they have one of the statues there?
Yes.
Isn't that cool?
Because I think there's three.
Four now. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So there's now one standing there.
They're cool. That statue is really, really cool.
It really is.
Yeah.
It's impressive.
So what's the Hall of Fame like? Is it like other museums where, you know, what do they have?
Back when I got inducted, I probably would have answered that, yes, it's kind of like other museums when you go in and, you know, you look around and it had a very museum feel. Wow, did they do a renovation? And when I went back this time, it had been a few years since I'd been in, and the renovation is phenomenal. And I'll have to see if we can pull together some pictures or something, but the two things that make it phenomenal, when you go upstairs in this building, they changed all the cases to glass cases that are kind of lower so you can actually look across the whole place, even though you can walk around and there might be five or six saddles on this island and there's other memorabilia and the plaques and stuff, but you can still look across the whole thing. Absolute favorite is that on the side walls, so three of the walls, when you're standing in there, like every once in a while, the lights all dim down. And the walls, while you're standing there, they look like they're projectors, but that makes it sound like they are, I don't know what the technology is, but they kind of look like giant, amazing TV screens, the walls do. Okay. And when you're standing there in general, it's like the Texas, you know, countryside and horses grazing in the distance. And so it's got this very like alive feeling of like you're looking at the all the native grasses and some horses off in the distance. And then the lights dim down and they're doing this whole thing called It's Never Just a Horse. And the lights dim down really low, like you're in a movie theater, and the walls go black. And these horses that are in studio lighting, because I was like, you have to tell me how this happened, because the horses come running out of the dark and they shot them in like a black studio with black dropped, you know, cloth sides. You can't see that in the video. But this horse just comes blasting out of nowhere. And of course, they're all like movie trained. So they've got the Liberty cues that they use for movie horses. And they come running right up to you. I mean, you're standing there. It feels like they are running right up to within. I mean, if you go eyeball to eyeball with them, they're life size. And they just came charging out of the dark and they're looking at you. And then they start calling more and more horses in. And they're all interacting and swishing around. And you automatically just stop whatever you're reading and you just watch these probably 8 or 10 panels around these three walls.
That's
and you're just
really
like
cool.
Staring around and you're like, I'm surrounded by a herd of the most beautifully lit, athletic, sassy horses all at Liberty. It's amazing.
I'm looking at pictures and wow, they have redone it since I even looked at the pictures last time.
Yeah, like it's really first class and just, you know, it's a fabulous place to visit. And I think it's just so beautiful and they've done such a great job of showcasing, you know, I love that Annie Oakley always has like her exhibit changes and it moves around, but I love that she's kind of always in there because of her impact. But then they're rotating out all these different things. And I have to admit, it was like crazy cool to like be wandering around and not know where you're going to stumble into it and like walk around the corner and like see my saddle and stuff there. It was like, I sent a picture to somebody and they were like, are you standing in there looking at your stuff? And I'm like, yeah, is that totally weird? Because it's weird for me. this is really weird, but in a good way.
I'm reading. I didn't put two and two together. I didn't realize that the inaugural Sergeant Reckless Award was given to Robin Hutton I just read that now, which is very appropriate. She wrote the book. She's really one that brought Sergeant Reckless back, got
That's
the statues
what she was
made.
Saying.
Yeah, she was in charge of all of that. We've been covering her for years since she started this whole project. Yeah. And I can't wait to. She's supposed to be sending us the new book. So I can't wait to read that. It's Animals in War and Peace. So I can't wait. Her previous book was great. So I can't wait to see this one. Good. Terrific. Well, I'm glad you had fun.
Yeah, it was quite amazing and highly recommended.
If you want to see pictures of the museum and or learn more about it, or if you're, what town is it in again?
Fort Worth.
Fort Worth. If you're in Fort Worth, you can go to cowgirl.net and that's where you'll find all the information.
And it's really kind of cool because they sell tickets to the luncheon. And so you can buy a ticket and attend and be in this same venue. And I'm going to keep going back. The food was amazing, too.
You would hope so, with the Cowgirl Hall of Fame. We're going to next year, I think it is. The big podcasting conference is going to be in Fort Worth. I went. They had it in Fort Worth years ago, and I went. But I'll have to check it out when I go back.
You have to share that with me. I need to know this.
Okay. I'll give you the dates. I'm pretty sure it's next year for Fort Worth. All right. Let's talk about Western dressage. Are you doing a YouTube series? What's going on with that?
I did a YouTube series that started back in the spring and I launched it and I did one episode a week from April all the way through the World Show in October. And I had done a series years ago back in like 2013, 14. I had done a YouTube series where I followed the training of a horse for a year once a week on YouTube and showed, you know, kind of like, hey, you've got this horse that kind of leads but sort of stands on his hind legs and tries to drag me around the arena all the way through taking him to his first show and doing all that kind of stuff. So I think it's really important to show people the progression, because sometimes when you just see the end result and you go like, I get asked when I travel and talk, even just last week, somebody was like, how long did it take to train that black mare? And I went back and did the math on it so I could answer the question. And she probably had about 1,000 hours of training from the first time I started, you know, training her to the time that it was about 800 hours from, you know, the first groundwork and saddling through the first, you know, bridleless performance. And then another couple hundred hours over that next year to get to where I could do the bareback and bridleless, because I had to really work on like my communication while bareback. But that's just, if you look at it, that's an hour to an hour and a half a day, 5 days a week. It's just a lot of consistency. And it's just it sounds like a lot and it is, but it's spread out to an hour to an hour and a half a day, 5 days a week for years.
Do you think are people surprised? Do they just assume that you'll get that done in a month?
Yes.
I thought so.
Yes. And I think it's accidental and a side effect of just like the world that we live in where you can, I mean, when I Google a cooking recipe, what happens? Like you pull up this recipe of somebody making soup and there's like a little automatically rolling video where somebody's like holding a whole onion and they flip their hand over and it falls down into the pan chopped up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're like, it's the coolest editing
ever. Or
debone
a chicken like that. They make that look easy. I've tried that.
But this whole, like, everything is just like snap, 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 snap so fast. But at the same time, like, it's really kind of hard to convey exactly how slow it is. So my best idea so far has been to just track things week by week so that people can, you know, catch on to the idea. But the biggest thing it does is it shows people, wow, maybe I'm actually on track, even though it feels like I'm way behind. Because when, you know, the most feedback from this latest YouTube series with the Western Dressage shows was that people were like, thank you for saying you were nervous. And thank you for showing us that your horses are whinnying when they're tied to the trailer. And that happened all year long. Like, it didn't go away after the first episode. It wasn't like episode one, they're whinnying, and then episode all the rest, they're done. No, the very last episode, I'm like reflecting and my horse is whinnying.
You know, it's funny. The reason I asked you that question is because we all assume the professionals that have been doing this forever, that they just have the magic sauce. When in fact, yeah, they do know, they've learned a lot, right? You've learned a lot through the years, but training a horse is still training a horse. You know, you're still doing it at their speed. You might know the techniques and you might know what to do and not what to do and all of that, but it still takes time.
Yeah. So I think something you just said right there was actually really key. And my opinion is you're correct in that I could do things really fast and I can, but going at their pace,
right.
To me, here's an interesting line to think about. I could go way faster than I choose to go because I feel that I'm going at this horse's pace, but it takes a ton of self-discipline and control to know how to go 10 times faster and hold back on that for the good of the horse. And it's an educated guessing game too. I mean, my opinion of how fast this one should go and somebody else's opinion of how fast it should go. But we're all fairly clear that just going red line, you know, to the breaking point is too fast. And so, you know, you got to figure out, but I think it takes a ton of, I think one of the lines people don't anticipate when they're learning is that you will eventually get to the point where you've learned a bunch and now you have to not use it all today.
Hmm. I think that's true in anything, really.
Yeah, exactly.
As you get better at something.
Right.
That is so true. And it's interesting that you say that. And I think that there are trainers and even very famous trainers who do push too hard. I mean, and they're, you know, and but I think too, your horses just don't last as long, and you know, they just don't last.
Right. So you can say pretty easily that, you know, too hard is basically an opinion. So we're all we could all line up in different places on that. But I think you're also onto something where it's like, look at the horse and what they tell you. Do they look comfortable here? Do they look happy here? You know, sure, it's going to be hard work at times. Like, I have no problem with my horse looking like it's working hard at times, because there's times I look like I'm working hard.
Right.
I'm okay with that. Yeah. But at the same time, like, can they last? Are they, you know, are you also seeing times where they're really happy? And that's important to me. And for sure, I think that's, yeah, very true.
Well, you got some questions that came out of that series that you did that we're going to address here before we get to our first guest. And we're going to do that right after this word from your sponsor.
It's no secret the animal nutrition market is saturated with substandard products and unfounded claims. And as horse owners, trying to choose the right supplement for the right horse can be maddening and ultimately a waste of time and money. At Equithrive, our mission is to make this whole song and dance easier on you and much more beneficial to your horses, with products that are developed with care and backed by science. Products you can trust to safely support optimal health and wellness to your horses. products that are independently tested to ensure your horse is getting exactly what it says on the label, and clinically tested to prove that, you know, it actually works on horses and not, say, mice. Equitrust's proprietary resveratrol ingredient, resvericin, has been scientifically proven to reduce inflammation and oxidative stress in horses, as well as help support optimum metabolic function. So stop wasting your time and money. If you believe in products backed by scientific research and clinical trials, Equithrive is the name to remember. So do your critters a favor, visit equithrive.com today.
So some of the questions that you got as a result of your Western Dressage YouTube series, one of them was, how do you get a horse comfy enough to focus on all the new places they have to go?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's true of anybody showing anything.
It is.
Trail riding, anything.
Right. And again, I think that one of the things about just videotaping as I went and just letting it be, you know, virtually live was that you do see that my horses are still whinnying, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're not comfy enough. And I think it comes back to getting them to focus on me when they get into those places. So that one thing that I like to do with my horses, when I'm teaching people, I say, okay, you can teach a horse to 100% focus on you, but do you really want that? Because I want my horse to be able to like give me feedback about the surroundings too. So I look at it more like I'm teaching them to be able to split and focus on two things at once, or at least shift gears really quickly. So when I'm doing like a round pen demonstration, a lot of times I'll send them towards an obstacle like a tarp, and they'll be looking at the tarp, and I want to see them looking at the tarp and then looking at me and looking at the tarp and looking at me, because then when I see that physically happening, I know that in their mind, they're like, okay, she wants me to do something over here with this, because she keeps reducing the pressure. She keeps backing off. She's communicating with me that I'm somehow in a better, okay, what does she want? And I can see that shifting back and forth. And that's all I'm after. Because if I can get that, what typically people are complaining about when they're not focused is that the horse is like, whoa, kid on a bike. And then 100% of their brain has gone to kid on the bike and zero is on the rider on their back. And when that happens, it's really uncomfortable because, you know, if it's a really young horse, a green horse, like a colt, then what happens is you intuitively know that when they switch back, they might be shocked to find you up there. That doesn't usually go well. Or if it's, you know, you're just like, when they come back, will they come back? When they come back, how will it be when they come back? Will they come back at all mentally? So all along the way, even in the beginning, as we're doing all of that, I'm looking to be able to have that horse split that attention like that. And I'm not totally looking for, I'm not sure if I'm in love with the word comfy there, because like I was uncomfortable at the Cowgirl Hall of Fame because it feels like I'm out of my comfort zone, but I'm not so far out that I'm crazy far out, but I'm stretching myself. So I think that's the biggest difference I see between younger, greener horses and older seasoned horses is that the older seasoned horse has been there, done that. And so they were a little uncomfortable when they were first doing it. And then they got good. And I think you can actually see that really well.
That's something that's going to surprise your fans too.
What's that?
That you just said that. That what? You're uncomfortable in that situation.
Yeah.
Was it a little bit of imposter syndrome?
Oh, no. I think it's just kind of oh my gosh. It was so funny because, you know, sometimes when you're at an event and like one person will say something. So, and then everybody else will kind of pick up on that theme. So the lady that was emceeing the Cowgirl Hall of Fame, she said, when they called me and asked me to emcee it, my first thought was, what am I going to wear? Oh no, what am I going to wear?
Yeah. Cause I imagine these cowgirls were all dressed to the nines.
Oh yeah. And so it was so fun because she's standing there being vulnerable and saying that. And it was really funny because you know that everybody in the room pretty much is having the same thought.
Yep.
So it's very much like that because so the next woman steps on and she picks it up. Like she's like, thank you for whatever. And I responded with, what am I going to wear? But what am I going to wear? And so I think that's normal.
Yeah,
you know,
I think it is normal.
From what I've read, because I read a lot about different people that are, you know, like learning and growing and challenging themselves. And I mean, Stephen Pressfield wrote an entire book on the art. It's a play on it. There's a book called, you know, The Art of War, and his is, and Stephen Pressfield's is The War of Art. And so don't get that confused if you're Googling it, because I'm talking
books.
About the more recent yeah. one. And so, but his whole theory in that book is that the artist's number one challenge is something, and he calls it with a capital R, resistance. He uses resistance like you would use a name all the way through the book. And he's like, the number one thing that the artist has to do is conquer resistance every day. So if you're gonna be a writer and you're gonna sit down and write at 9 o'clock, you know, people interview, you know, Stephen King is from Maine, so I've read a lot of different interviews on Stephen King and his writing, and people are like, do you write when you're inspired, or do you write when you whatever? And a lot of writers will answer, I write when I'm inspired, which is at 9 o'clock every morning.
Yeah, when I go to work. Yeah. Like
you, and it's that resistance between it's that resistance. And that's, I think it's just a normal part of life. And you get better in certain places. You get more comfortable in certain places. But resistance is a thing forever, is what
it is. I did, you know, we owned an acting company, and I played the king and for 450 shows over 10 years. We did a Benny Hill version of a medieval feast.
I want to see this.
So we did it for 10 years in restaurants and for corporations and that kind of thing. And we had a big cast, and it was a lot of fun. It was all improv. But you know what? I did 450 shows, and there wasn't a time I wasn't nervous. Now, and it's probably like you, when you walk on stage and get to work, you know, when it's actually time to go out there and do your thing. And I'm still this way. I do the opening keynote at podcast conferences, and it's the same way. Mm-hmm. I walk out on stage, and then it clicks. Then I'm on. Then it's fine. Mm-hmm. Then I'm good. And I think horses are kind of the same way, right? When they get there, they're all nervous and everything. But many horses, especially if they're trained well, when they get on stage, quote unquote, they kind of get to work. Right. And then they many of them, not all, but many of them will start to focus at that point. Mm-hmm. It's getting them to focus on what they're supposed to be there doing. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times when you get there, the parking lot, the, you know, everything, the new stall and the new horses and the winning and all of that stuff. But when you finally get to work, you relax, they'll relax.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Totally.
I was trying to do that was a very long analogy, by the way.
So it's interesting that you say that, because at the very last show, which was the world show that I documented, I actually said, and it's on the video, I was like, I arrived down here. I built in a couple of extra days to arrive, relax, get the horses to settle in, which is what you're talking about. But what was really funny is I ended up like putting them into a little bit of light work and riding, which I didn't plan on going into it, but they were so weird. They were like maximum weird, and I was like, what is going on? You guys have been like seasoned and you shouldn't be this on edge. But I said they reminded me of like overtired toddlers. Like they were physically kind of tired from all that travel, because it was the longest they'd been hauled, and it was a 16-hour, you know, travel out there. And then on top of that, like, so they're physically kind of, you know, could use a little rest, but they were mentally wired the way that overtired toddlers get. And I'm like, whoa, you guys are like, you guys are not right. But sure enough, I had built in that extra time, and they settled down and they were back to their regular selves after a couple days of, you know, getting back to normal.
Yeah, they got to work.
Yeah, they got to work.
Yep. Does it take more patience to train a mare with so much confidence as Gabby? It seems my mare has lots of confidence, but also so much more stubborn about things. Well, smart ones always are. love her to death, though.
Yeah, so one of the things that I thought was interesting was right in the very first video, I showed the difference between Gabby, who's very naturally confident, and a lot of times I'll jokingly call her my stud mare, because she's the best of both worlds. She's like, she's got this strong, bold confidence of a stallion, but she's also got that mare where she'll look at you and she's like, you know, I'm a queen. Don't offend me. Like you, she's looking at you and she's like, don't offend. Like this is, you got to be careful not to offend her there. And so she's got this, like, I call her my stud mare. And then the other thing that I was documenting was that Willow's kind of the opposite. Willow was not confident at all. So it was fun over the whole series to be able to say, you know, here's how confident Gabby is handling it. Here's how insecure Willow is handling it. But for sure, what's interesting with Gabby is that she's so naturally confident. She doesn't necessarily believe that she needs a leader. So that can come across as more stubborn when realistically she's just like, this is how it should be done. And I'm confident that this is how it should be done.
Yeah, I got this. You know,
I don't need your help. Yeah. And so it does, in a way, it does lean towards them appearing more stubborn. But I try to phrase it more like she's confident. And so you just have to be really confident about your stance. And I find that it's more of a patience thing than it is about, you know, just trying to, you know, run through and conquer, because that wouldn't actually work with one that's already really confident. They'll kind of ball up against that kind of work or energy or whatever, where it's almost a little bit more like playing chess. You're a little bit more, they make their move, you make your move, they make your, and it's back and forth. And you can see her respecting that you have a plan and that you keep making these moves and countering or redirecting her moves. And you can see the respect build there. And I think what's interesting is she's the type of horse that could go into a very traditional training plan and just be asked to do a whole bunch of stuff really hard, really fast, and would probably hold up to it. But I think that you wouldn't get the top 10%. You know, so I think you get real far, real fast, and she wouldn't have like Willow would have some sort of breakdown. Willow would not handle that kind of pressure. It just would not happen. Gabby would handle it, but she would handle it with like a resentment and that.
Well, because it's got to be her idea.
Because she's got to have been worked with to get there.
Right.
She she's tough enough she's tough enough to take it. But if you earn her respect on the way, that's when you're going to get that top 10%, and she'll give you everything. So
because she wants to.
Because she wants to. Because she's bought into your plan.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not just true of mares. I think a lot of ponies are that way too. You know, my Hackney pony is that way. You know, it's the exact same way he is. And he's very smart, which is not always good.
Exactly.
What about going the other way with the unconfident horse, the one that's just not confident about anything?
Yeah, see, that's Willow. And that was what was fun about doing this, is to have like the two opposite horses. Because Willow, if she'd gone into a traditional training program, would have been one of the horses that somebody would have been like, okay, and this one's fried. We got to just send that one down the road somewhere. Because she would not have handled pressure that wasn't explained to her thoroughly, slowly, you know, a lot taken into consideration with her. And so it was really interesting being able to document both of them. Because you can actually see there's still similarities, even though they have those two opposite temperaments going on there. And, you know, so it took more time to build Willow's confidence, you know, going to shows and different things like that. Gabby walked in and looked more like, wow, this is a really cool place to be. So there was that confident air about like, I'm here, and, you know, she just has a presence around her. But that didn't mean that she was 100% solid. So it's interesting how, even though she's naturally confident, she still lacks experience. And you could still see the wobbles, or the way that she wobbled was like she slows down when she gets stressed, where Willow amps up when she gets stressed. So it's kind of interesting to know them at home and know who they are, and then see how they process that stress. So Willow would get more of that. She's a lack of confidence, and she would get more of that traditional hot, nervous look, where Gabby is more naturally confident. But it's like, I'm fairly confident in a number of places, but there's places you put me in, I'm not so confident. And without experience, Gabby goes in, but she just kind of slows everything down, which makes it easy to ride, except for the leg yield. There was a leg yield that I was doing during one of the tests, and I started out with a pretty decent trot. And as I was going across the arena, I was like, I'm slowing down. I'm not sure I'm going to still be in a jog by the end of this line. But I knew that she was kind of on overload, and that was how she was like processing it, is like slow.
So give us an example of something that you did differently between the two training wise.
So but the difference between the two training wise is that, so like with Willow, I went and did the same exact thing over and over again. Like, so she was the one that tends to get more hot and reactive. So when I would go, I followed a routine with both of them, but with Willow, it takes probably 3 to 4 times more exposures to get the same level that Gabby does. Now, so basically if I did, you know, if I took Willow to, you know, 40 shows, 40 classes and Gabby to 10, I was kind of felt like I was at the, I was kind of around the equivalent of like, okay, they're kind of in the same place. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
She just, so it, now don't get me wrong, like Gabby, but here's the deal. And I've said this all along. Gabby is a 4-year-old. Willow is an 8-year-old. So I'm showing them both for the first time in Western Dressage, both for the first time at the World Show. This one's 4. This one's 8. You can already see the difference right there in those numbers. And then when Gabby has as many hours of training as Willow does, she's going to look phenomenal and much more advanced than Willow because she processes the training. Just it's just going to be so much more solid, where a lot of what I'm doing with Willow is building her confidence. So it's just time consuming.
Well, we're going to take another break and then we're going to come back with Ginny is back with us, and she has been with you on every episode. So Ginny is with Collaboration Partners. What are we talking about with Ginny today?
Oh, that's going to be a surprise.
Oh, okay.
We're going to talk about emotions and holidays and what you can learn from it with your horse.
Did you know that horses with limited access to pasture also have limited access to vitamin E? Vitamin E plays an important role in the function of your horse's muscles and nerves. Plus, it's also an antioxidant. Horses in training, aging horses, and horses that are recovering from certain health issues often require even more. I recently had a blood test run on 4 of my horses, and the 3 that are in training all tested low for vitamin E. And now I am supplementing them with a pelleted, natural vitamin E from Equithrive. To learn more about vitamin E and Equithrive's products, please visit equithrive.com.
And we're back with Ginny Talego from the Collaboration Partners. Hi, Ginny.
Hey, Stacy and Glenn. How are you guys?
Great. Thanks for coming back again. I think actually you've been here with me every single time. So thank you. Thank you. And I owe you, I was going to say coffee, but it's tea. I owe you a tea.
No, it's a delight. I'm delighted to be back on. I'm excited. What are we talking about today?
Today, I thought we would just talk a little bit about the holidays, because my idea here is that I want to talk about things that we might experience at, you know, something that we could consider stressful. I always like to draw analogies between horse shows and some other part of life. And I'm thinking that the holidays can sometimes provide something that looks a lot more like, you know, something we might see in our horse world. So today I wanted to wrap the holidays and the thoughts that we have and things that we do there, and then bring that analogy back to the horse world. Think we can do it?
Absolutely.
So immediately I got the picture of the loose horse at the horse show and then your crazy drunk uncle running around the house. For some reason, I immediately correlated those two. I don't know why.
Now that is quite the mind picture, right? Like,
and he doesn't have a shirt on, because you know that's the way he is.
Is that a real life experience?
No, then? I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that at all.
But it could happen.
Yes. Now the horse loose. Every horse show I've ever been to, there's been a horse loose.
Well, with that in mind, what holiday scenario shall we pull out to start with? I'm thinking. What do you think? A meal. I like a meal. Let's do a meal at the holidays with family.
Okay. Yeah. Well, just that in and of itself creates stress, I think, for most people. Not for me, because I don't cook. We go out for the holidays to eat, so that takes all that stress off of me. However, you know, I think earlier you mentioned, even you said, a perception of stress around the holidays, and so You know, I think just thinking of that holiday dinner that you're hosting at your house, and you know, you've got 20 family members coming from both sides of the family, some of your husband's family or your wife's family, or, you know, and your family, and you start ahead of time, well ahead of time, months for some people, thinking about that whole scenario, and your all of your thoughts and perceptions and assumptions and beliefs around that event start bubbling up for you. And I think probably everyone who's listening to this has had this experience in some respect. And you think about just all of the emotional stuff that starts to churn for you as that day gets closer, and how that impacts everything else, how it impacts the way that you're interacting with your family members, and the results of that. So I think that could be a really easy thing for people to relate to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even as you were saying it, I was thinking just bringing one dish to bring to the meal, you know, a lot of times I'm thinking, but this person doesn't like this, and this one over here is trying to avoid that, and this one over here is trying to do that. And in all of the trying to be helpful, it can feel like a lot of stress. So what do you recommend?
Well, you know, this is something I do a lot in my leadership development work, you know, is getting people to look at how their thoughts and beliefs, perceptions and assumptions impact things. And you know, with your family, you know, I think a lot of times that we put so much pressure on ourselves. We have this belief that we have to somehow be the perfect wife or the perfect husband or the perfect daughter, perfect son, whatever that is. And we put this pressure on ourselves because of that belief, and it creates just, I think what I've noticed for people is it creates a huge amount of stress, you know? And so if we're thinking about this, if you could imagine a triangle turned upside down, and at the bottom of that is whatever this experience is. And so in this context, we're talking about that holiday dinner with family. And the next thing is what are your beliefs and thoughts, perceptions, and assumptions around that event? And it's going to be valid for you based on whatever your life experiences have been. You know, if you've had some negative experiences around those family dinners, that's going to shape your belief around this dinner that you're hosting. If you've had positive family experiences, that's going to shape it as well. And so, but you know, if you are looking at it from a negative perception where you're just really stressed about this, that's going to cause you to have this emotional response of, you know, thinking to yourself, I don't think I can do this. What if somebody doesn't like what I'm making? What if there's usually a certain person within the family that we really want to like whatever we are making for dinner. And we want that person to have a positive experience because somewhere along the line, we've deemed that that person holds a lot of influence. And so, you know, whatever our emotional reaction is to our belief about this family dinner, is going to impact how we respond. You know, it's going to impact, you know, all of our interactions with our family, our immediate family. This is where you have, right, the person who's kind of running around trying to get the house ready, trying to get the house clean, make sure everything's clean, everything, you know, is in its place, making sure all the food is cooking at the right time. And so everything is going to come out right. Right. No, you know what? I mean, this is the normal experience, right? I've been there. I used to do it. I don't anymore because now I have a different belief system around those things, but I've been there. And when we are under those stressful situations, a lot of times our responses of interacting with people around us can be less than stellar, right? This is the, you know, why haven't you picked that up yet? Or, you know, why are you in here? Why is the dog in here? You know, we kind of go into this craze of behavior. And the result of that is oftentimes we don't even enjoy having this time with our family because we're so stressed out about it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so, you know, I think just looking at it from the standpoint of how much of an impact our thinking has on the results of things is so powerful, you know?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting that as you were saying that, I was thinking, you know, when I tie it back to the horses, the place where it's like that play between the thought and the emotion. So, you know, when you were talking about the family members and all this stuff, it was you were talking about the one that you want to impress. And then I was also thinking in the back of my mind that sometimes with family, it almost seems like it goes two different ways. There's either that or there's like almost a lack of awareness almost.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So, you know, and it's just like, this is just the way it's going to go. And that's what I see a lot of times when people are with their horses. They've got a lot of this, like, it's familiar and there's this is just the way it's going to go. And what I see is I see them shut down that awareness of what's happening. They just kind of go into like this, you know, they just go onto this track that they're just kind of like one of those car washes where you get in and you're just sucked onto this track. And then you're just going down through this car wash and this, like, without any decision making, it's just happening to you. And
right.
That was making me think of that when you were talking about the holidays and everything, but when I said, have you been spying on me? And you've got that, like, running around and you're trying to get everything going on. To me, the similarity between those two things is a lack of awareness. Like, it's like, if right. you stop for 30 seconds and feel what's going on in your body and the amount of tension that you're carrying while you're trying to, like, prepare this meal or clean the house or whatever, if it's not being done with, like, you can still get things done and have peace and be there. And I think that's where that crossover between what people do with their horses and what people do over here, you know, in holiday world, it's that, to me, it's that awareness or lack of awareness. Like, hey, when things start to escalate, like, what are you going to do to, like, check back in to try to find that triangle that you're always showing? Maybe we can stick we'll send that to Glenn so we can stick it in the show notes, it's going to be like, because you've got to be able to, for me especially, identify the thought and the feeling. And sometimes it's the feeling in my body of tension that then makes mm-hmm. me have to go back and double check the thought. Or sometimes it's very clearly the thought. You know, sometimes it's a sentence in my head and I'm like, wow, that sentence is really clear. And, but a lot of times for me, it's like a feeling in my body, like, wow, my shoulders are really tight. What the heck am I doing?
Yeah. Well, and I think you nailed it just a second ago when you said, you know, we create these patterns of thoughts. And so, again, in my work, what I see routinely is how people do one thing is often how they do a lot of other things. And so when people have a thought about a situation out with the horses, usually it's very, very good chance that they have that same thought process with people in a similar situation of, like, when someone's not doing something that they want them to do or that type of thing. And I think when you're talking about it with how that translates over to people working with their horses, that, you know, what is it about that the anticipation of the experience that starts to trigger that thought process? Because it's about 90 seconds from the time that we have a thought get triggered in our mind, and then it works its way through our body very quickly to where we have a physical response, like you were just saying, of tension in your shoulders or your stomach getting all, you know, flip-floppy or whatever that is. And then that's where we start to go to what we have gone to before, right? We're like, oh, I recognize this feeling. This is anxiety, or this is stress, or, you know, this is me being concerned about, you know, being judged or whatever that is. And if we don't allow ourselves to stop for a moment and just take a pause and go, what could I do differently right now in order to get a different result? Because I don't think that most people want the result of having family turmoil at the holidays. I mean, there are a certain number of people that do thrive on that, but for the most part, I think most people.
I hope those people don't have horses. Is just what I'm saying.
Right. Yeah. How you do one thing, how you do most things. But I think there is an opportunity there for us with our horses, right? And this is something that Stacy and I talk about a lot, right? Stacy is how do we help people shift their perception with their horse in order to feel something differently and be able to then respond differently and get the result they want with their horses.
Yeah. And, you know, it's always interesting because for me, and I know that it depends on where people are listening, because Glenn probably has some nice warm weather to tease us with. But for me, this is a season where I slow down because I'm not going to as many shows and stuff. And so I try to look for as many areas of life that I can glean information from. And since when I'm with my horses, I'm half the equation, that actually means a lot of like self-study during this period, because really when I go out to the barn and I'm trying not to freeze, I'm trying to be as efficient as possible out there. Where in the summer, right, I'll spend time wandering down the trail, pondering life. But this time of year, I'm running out, hoping I don't have to break water buckets and, you know, and like running back inside. And I'm like doing more pondering with a notebook in the house than I, and maybe a cup of coffee, as opposed to out in the barn. And I think that if we could encourage people to look at those moments, and if I had one physical piece of advice, it would be to literally take deep breaths and count for 30 seconds and try to become aware of your body, because that is, that is exactly what I see missing when I'm coaching somebody. Because everybody has had the joke at some point of like, and breathe, you know, you're doing whatever, somebody's coaching you, and the one thing that they have to tell you to do is like, and breathe. Because we start to get, you know, so hyper-focused, like that running around, cleaning, getting everything ready, we forget to literally be in our own body. And then we are with a horse who is going to feed off from that in their body. And so it's like, it is really fun. Just like, you know, Glenn and I were visiting earlier about my trip to the Cowgirl Hall of Fame recently. And it is that self-study of myself in all these different areas that I'm doing because it will benefit me over with my horse. Otherwise, I'm not as sure that I would even do it. Everything has to tie back to a horse for me.
Right. So. Well, and I think too, you know, I mean, for me with my horses, I have to really be very cognizant of that stuff when I'm out with my horses, especially when I have clients out with my horses, because oftentimes, you know, the clients are out there and they're busy trying to get their task done. And, you know, and I can see the horses are kind of, you know, like, I'm checking out on this because I'm not really sure about what's happening. And I will literally breathe so that my horses can sense that, you know, and sometimes it helps me, because if I start making assumptions about what's happening with the clients, if I start thinking, oh my gosh, they're not going to be successful, and then they're not going to like this experience, and they're going to go tell people bad things about my business. And I will, you know, I start getting stressed and all of that stuff. I start going through that triangle. And so I have taught myself to recognize when I'm starting to feel that in my body. And I literally will take a step back out of the situation and just breathe. And it allows me to have that moment where I was just talking about, of that pause to say, okay, what's really happening here? Why am I having this thought process? And if I want a different result, what can I do differently? And I do think, Stacey, you're absolutely right. We've all been either coaching someone, or we are the ones who were being coached. And you have that whole thought process of, Okay. And then don't forget to breed.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Well, that's awesome. I think we did it. I think we actually did bring holidays, thoughts, getting different results, and all of this back to horses. We did it.
How about
High
that?
Five.
Virtual I know.
Coffee and tea.
Now, what do we do about the crazy uncle that's drunk running around without his shirt on? Still not sure what to do
that's
about him.
A whole other session.
Thank you for joining us again.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on, you guys.
Merry Christmas.
It's always great to be with you. So, yeah, have a great Christmas.
In this week's segment, On Call with Dr. Monty, sponsored by Equithrive, Dr. Monty and I discuss equine dentistry. I'd like to say a big thank you to Equithrive for creating the opportunity to talk with Dr. Monty and for sponsoring this podcast. Dr. Monty McInturf is located in Tennessee, where he is the co-owner and president of the Tennessee Equine Hospital, which has three locations throughout Tennessee. He is an equine practitioner with over 30 years of experience with a focus on the equine athlete. Let's take a listen to my conversation with Dr. Monty. Dr. Monty, thank you for joining me on the podcast today. Today, I would like to ask you about dentistry and having the horse's teeth taken care of. Could you please share some of the symptoms that a horse might be exhibiting if they need dental work? And yeah, let's just start with that.
Yeah, sure. You know, I'm going to start. Well, thanks for having me today. I'm enjoying being here. It just a quick note about dentistry. I have the simple question asked all the time, like, Dr. Monty, what do horses do in the wild? They don't get their teeth floated. Ooh. You know, how come they don't have their teeth floated? Mm-hmm. And I simply say, you know, it's part of natural selection. The horses in the wild with good teeth are stronger and run faster and do better and reproduce, and they actually live in nature beautifully. Horses with bad teeth typically don't carry their weight properly. They have trouble chewing. They're not as healthy. They're unthrifty. And they're horses that actually end up with natural selection being the ones that the wolf or the bear or whatever their predator is happens to catch first, because they're the weaker ones. And I'll say that to say, when we've domesticated horses, we stopped breeding for good teeth. We started breeding for other great attributes, like the way they move, the way their feet look, how handsome they are, what color they are. And we really got away from breeding for teeth, right? And so the domesticated horse has a lot of dental issues, and they don't have the predator that the wild horse has. So I say all that to say, a horse's teeth continue to grow in length as they get older, and if the teeth match up well, either front to back or side to side, a horse files his own teeth. He doesn't need a dentist. But if a horse has an overbite or has an underbite or a malocclusion from side to side, they get these really sharp points, and those sharp points result in behavioral problems, difficulty chewing, weight loss, maybe tossing their head when we're giving them a little bit of bit pressure. Or how they start carrying their head a little differently because it's uncomfortable when we've got them, when we're trying to pull them into collection or whatever we're doing when we're riding. Mm-hmm. So this kind of bad behavior is one of the things we look for as riders.
Yeah, that is a really great observation. I never thought of it like that before. And it makes sense because I have to admit, I love minis, but minis seem to come with a whole basket full of dental problems. And
right. That
would make sense because you're right. They wouldn't have been breeding thinking for teeth. They were breeding thinking about a whole bunch of other things, not necessarily
exactly.
Teeth. That's great.
The wild horse population, if you do a dental exam on them, you're like, wow, these teeth are great. How come? Well, genetically, they bred good teeth because those are the stronger ones, right? I mean, it just makes sense.
Yeah, that's awesome. I've noticed a few times because sometimes people will say, I haven't had a chance to have their teeth done, so I'm riding them in a halter. And it's interesting, sometimes when I see young horses, even with halter pressure, I can see the horse opening their mouth or doing different things because that pressure is still going to touch the side of their cheeks, which is still going to cause that irritation.
Exactly.
So you almost don't really escape the dental problem just by avoiding the bit. And then I've heard, you know, and had the dentist explain that, you know, even when the horse is just
you know, pretty much move around if they've got dental problems, they're uncomfortable. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Very good.
Definitely.
Well, thank you so much. That is very good stuff. Would you have any tips on choosing an equine dentist?
Well, I appreciate you asking that. I'm a veterinarian that also does dentistry, and there are a lot of veterinarians across the United States and that do dentistry. And for some reason, you know, we've got this this aura put on us that we don't like to do teeth, and we don't do teeth well. Well, I can tell you from my experience, there's a lot of good veterinarians that do dentistry. So I would encourage you to start there. Mm-hmm. It seems a little self-serving, but it's actually the truth. And our prices are very, you know, compatible to the market. You know, I would encourage you to find someone that you trust and someone that wants to move cautiously. I do believe you can overfloat the teeth. You can do too much at one time, which changes the bite and changes the jaw, which changes the temporomandibular joint, which can cause pain. Mm-hmm. So I encourage you when you find something you need to correct, try to correct it in phases instead of too aggressively. If you think about going to the dentist yourself, it's not the most comfortable thing to go to the dentist. And if the dentist does too much work to you, you pay for it for a couple of days, right? With some jaw pain. So let's, you know, I would just kind of move slowly there, you know, and get a reference from a friend that has had a good experience. But I encourage you to look in the horse's mouth at least annually, preferably twice a year.
Awesome. Very good. I love finding vets that have multiple areas of interest, because that always interests me if I found a vet that does dentistry, because I kind of feel like I've got all my bases covered, because sometimes you don't have just a dentistry issue and it's super convenient if my professional knows both areas. So yeah. I love that recommendation. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
I hope you found that segment helpful. And I thought the information on the wild horses was fascinating. If you have time to thank Equithrive or Dr. Monty or both of them, I'm sure that they'd appreciate hearing from you. You can find Dr. Monty at TN, as in Tennessee, equinehospital.com, and Equithrive is at equithrive.com.
Well, we're going to wrap up the show here for December. And of course, you can find all of Stacy's past episodes at stacywestfall.com is one place you can go. You can also find them at horsesinthemorning.com. But Stacy, do you guys stay home with the kids the holidays, or do you travel? We're talking about what happens.
I'm hoping that the kids come visit me because, you know,
yeah,
the 2 out of 3 moved out. So I'm gonna be like, please come visit your mother.
That happens until they have kids, and then you have to start going there.
Yeah. So I'm in the middle of that new dance. So
you don't have grandkids yet, right?
No. Yeah, not yet.
Not yet. So you got time. They'll be coming to visit you for a little while yet.
There you go.
And you can
lure them in with presents. Is this when I start wrapping presents early and putting really big boxes under the tree?
A word gets out.
Lure them in.
Yeah. Word gets out, mom shopped. we can go home.
That's right.
Well, I hope you have a very wonderful holiday, and I hope it's a little bit white, but not too white.
There you go.
We don't get white.
So. I hope yours is not white.
Yeah, I know.
Really
things have really gone south, literally. And, of course, it is stacywestfall.com. You have a podcast as well.
I do.
What's it called?
With a very catchy name of Stacy Westfall Horse Podcast.
And you can find that on any podcast player. Just search for Stacy Westfall. It'll pop up. Stacy is here the first Tuesday of every month. That's what you can find her. So we look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you, and Merry Christmas.